Time to get our view from the middle. He's the fine sports journalist for USA Today. You may recall he once roamed the sports pages here in Eugene. Keep up with his work online. USAtoday.com on Twitter, at George Schroeder. George, happy almost Christmas. How are things in your world?
Things are good. I was sort of stuck on the idea of me roaming the sports pages, but not exactly sure how that went. But it was great fun to be able to work at the Register Guard for 5 years, and now Austin Meek is doing a tremendous job there. And obviously, he's a contributor to your show on some other day, right?
Yeah, Tuesday. He's our Tuesday leadoff guy. Can't get much better.
You know, so the problem is I have to follow him every week. That's the problem.
Coming in behind a super-duper star and a local guy now. You know, interesting, though, that you brought up your time here and specified, because we had a conversation about you, and we were kind of curious, what were the circumstances, where did you come here from that led to you relocating to our fair city?
Well, who is we? And we had this conversation. Is this like you down like after the show with some buddies?
Yeah. Actually, I go out to a local watering hole, and you know, some of the guys come by. I said, "Yeah, I heard you listening, talking with George," and they were trying to get the Schroeder timeline right.
I joined the Register Guard in August 2007 from the Oklahoman, which is the Oklahoma
City
newspaper.
Okay.
And that I had covered Oklahoma football for 6 or 7 years at that point. But I'm originally from Little Rock. It's as I told people when I got there, it gets worse. I'm not from Oklahoma, I'm actually from Arkansas. So I'd worked in Little Rock and then Oklahoma City and then came to Eugene.
And then in 2008, you got to go to China to cover the Beijing Games. I was curious, of all the amazing things you've gotten to do, how high up the list was that?
That's about as high as it gets. I mean, it's of course it's 9 years ago now, but when Usain Bolt burst onto the scene and he ran that unbelievable, he set the world record in the 100. In the bird's nest in Beijing, and then he set the world record in the 200 and was basically slowing down to celebrate. And you know what? Those are two of the highlights of my career right there, sitting in the area where the press seats were to cover it for the Register Guard because of Tracktown USA. I mean, one of the highlights of my career right there, thanks to the Register Guard for the commitment to covering track and to covering elite-level, high-level Olympic track. And thanks to a community that cares about track. I mean, that remains probably the highlight of my career is those two moments with Usain Bolt.
Now, I know that logistically sometimes covering an Olympics, you can't get everywhere. And those games were the redeem team for basketball, Michael Phelps. You mentioned, obviously, Bolt. What else did you get to see that, kind of triggers the great memories?
Well, I saw the basketball team play one once, and it was one of the blowouts, and I cannot remember who they played. It was not a medal game,
right?
Medal round game. What I remember about that was the president, George W. Bush, at the time was during the campaign right before Obama was going to get elected. But so George W. Bush was in the arena that night, which was a little bit interesting, sitting near the press. You cover sports long enough, maybe somebody like a president will be at a game you're at. But it was just—it was a weird experience to be in China and have that happen. was fortunate enough to I never really went and saw Phelps. Just the swimming, the tickets as they call them for the press credentials for swimming were such that it was not going to be something that I was going to be able to do without really working at it.
Right.
And look, I was there, let's be honest, to cover track.
I gotcha.
That's why the Register Guard put the investment in. And so, you think of the Olympics and you think of gymnastics, you think of, the swimming and things like that. But once the track started, which is after the first week, so there's 3 weeks of the Olympics, the last 2 weeks were track. I was pretty much in the bird's nest all day, every day, which is, it's a tremendous place to be. And it was lots of fun, and obviously there were some Oregon, a lot of Oregon connections even then. I mean, you know, so that was the year, of course, of the Oregon sweep in the U.S. Olympic trials in the 800 meters.
Right,
so that was fun.
Right.
And, you know, just that was a great year. I don't even know why we're talking about the 08 Olympics in Beijing, but that was a tremendous year, and what a highlight.
Well, the topic was the history of George Schroeder, and we couldn't do that without the 08 Olympics.
Isn't that something that you and your buddies should be talking about, like, in, I don't know, mid-July when there are no sports on? I mean, literally when the baseball season takes its break, rather than right now when there's so much to talk about?
Hey, George, you were on the air, people were turned on by it, and it came up over beers. What could I do? I'm just a mere pawn in this game.
Well, I guess this is all largely positive, so I guess I'm good.
All right, so now that we've settled that, we've reached the first early signing day, and with it, you know, bowl season's kind of getting rolling. You obviously talk to a lot of people around the country, colleagues, coaches. Does it seem there's any more chaos to this early signing period to just get out there and get them signed, or is it just a different day?
I think it depends on where you are as a program. You know, I saw Nick Saban doesn't like it very much. I've heard other coaches don't like it very much, too. But then Dabo Swinney says, hey, I like it a lot, you know. And what's interesting is I think a lot of the sort of the big boy Power Five programs that traditionally sign really good classes are going to sign the vast majority of those 4- and 5-star recruits that they sign every year on this date, or at least in this sort of 72-hour period, which, you know, it's not really a signing day. It's a 3-day deal.
Right.
And then then they'll look around and they'll say, all right, what do we have left and who's left to get? And that's what the second signing day, which is the traditional first Wednesday in February signing day that used to be sort of the celebration, it's going to become the sort of the pick up what's left over thing. And that's not to say those won't be really good players. It's just to say that you'll have signed the bulk of your class earlier. If I were a lower end of the Power Five program, or if I were a Group of Five program, I'm not sure I like this as much. Although you could make the point that the Group of Fives, one of the things that happens to them sometimes is late in January, back when there was just the one signing day, you'd find a larger school or a more established program swoop in and flip that kid that you've had forever because they've decided, you know, something's happened with their class and they suddenly have room for him. Well, it's very possible that you'll sign those kids in December now and they won't get flipped. So I think there's something for everybody. It's going to take an adjustment period for all of us, whether you're a coach or a recruit or those of us who just follow it, because it's just so unusual. I do think this. I think it's to the detriment, at least this year, of the early bowls. And then I think the coaching carousel has been accelerated in a bad way because of it. And I think we're going to see it accelerate even more next year as athletic directors go, okay, we need to make a change, but we need to get a full staff in place because this December signing date is a big, big deal. It's essentially becoming what the February signing date was. So I don't think we know all the consequences yet, but it was definitely weird to have it in the middle of December.
So speaking of coaches who have a tendency to change, Lane Kiffin was in a bowl game last night after he got a 10-year contract from Florida Atlantic. I got to tell you, this year he's made some funny tweets, some funny comments. Is there any logic that there's no timetable, but sometimes you just see a guy who maybe fell up a few times, sees his mistakes, and now just kind of comes out of it and is just loving life with a big smile?
Well, listen, I think this is who Lane Kiffin has pretty much been. Now, he was muzzled the last couple of years because of Nick Saban,
right,
and how he does with his assistants. And even so, there would be some tweets occasionally and some things that would come out from Lane Kiffin, and you know Nick's not going to like that. Well, now he's completely unfettered, and I guarantee you Nick hasn't liked some of the things he's poked fun at Nick about. But look, I think at Florida Atlantic he can do whatever he wants and get away with whatever he wants. And look, he's not going to be there 10 years. But
right,
even though they may, you know, be really good again next year, I'm not ready to say that a Power Five athletic director and president are ready to bring Lane on campus just yet. I think probably 2 years from now, it's at that point, if you're still winning, maybe somebody says, all right, let's go do it. But, you know, if you bring Lane Kiffin on campus, you're basically getting that guy in terms of the same guy who's doing those things with the, with the tweets right now. And by the way, Florida Atlantic, part of the story that's not been told is they basically brought every last chance kid, literally a couple of kids from Last Chance U, but every last chance kid you could get, they brought into school. And that's not the kind of thing you can do at some places either.
Sure.
So, I just think this is who he is as much as it is he's suddenly free to be me or whatever. I think this is who he's always been. And, it's nice that he got a 10-year deal. I think everybody understands he won't be there for 10 years, but he's not necessarily leaving tomorrow either because somebody's got to want to hire him.
Sure. Free to be me, the Lane Kiffin 30 for 30 coming soon. So we know Oregon went to Vegas to play a bowl game. Apparently they got sidetracked because they didn't reach Boise State territory till the middle of the third quarter.
Wow, man.
You don't want to read too much into a game, but safe to say not the flying start they hoped for after promoting Mario Cristobal, because that was a bad performance.
No, and it doesn't inspire confidence. Let me say this. There's a couple things that mitigate it. Among them, one, you've got all this uncertainty with the coaching situation, and then even once you promoted Mario, who are going to be the assistants? Where are they going to be? Are they going to be retained? Are they going to decide to stay? And obviously, look, it's a big deal that Jim Leavitt is, signed up, going to make a lot of money, but going to stay around. That's a big deal. So you have all this uncertainty feeding into the bowl game. Then you have what we were just talking about, where the coaches are out recruiting. And, part of the reason that, let's be honest, Cristobal was retained was because of the recruiting momentum, the perceived recruiting momentum, and the idea that he could help, continue it, maintain that class, and all those kinds of things. And so it's hard to imagine that anybody would say that their sole focus was on the Vegas Bowl. Whether you're a player or a coach or anything else, and I think it showed. Now, is that a good way to be? No, but I think it's understandable right now. That said, I don't think they're alone. I think that's going to be an issue, and maybe has been an issue in some other bowl games or some other teams too. But I'll go back to what I said to start with. You're right; it's not an inspiring start for what people hope to get out of Cristobal and how they hope the program is going to build. I mean, losing to Boise State, which I know sticks in the craw of Duck fans,
yep.
Even though it had been a decade since they played them, that's not a good deal, especially this particular Boise State team, especially with a healthy Justin Herbert, especially with all these other things like that. That's not good. Now you've got the whole offseason to sort of grouse about that, and none of that matters a whole lot. What's going to matter is, do the Ducks get better under Cristobal? Do they get back to contending for Pac-12 titles or not? And that's obviously what people want. I mean, nobody wanted 7-6.
Right.
But 8-5 wasn't going to be much better, let's be honest. It just would have been a nice way to start for Cristobal.
Let's wrap with this final thought for George Schroeder. College basketball, in your state resides a top 20 Oklahoma team. There's a fellow by the name of Trey Young. Duck fans saw him torch them for 43 points in that Phil Knight tournament. Just tied the NCAA record for assists in a game. And I get a lot of Sooner fans are thinking football now, but what's the buzz maybe about this team and this remarkable freshman who happens to be from Norman?
Well, there is a buzz, but it's a weird thing. You're right. And look, Oregon fans would understand this. If the Ducks were in the playoff right now and you had a Trey Young, a potential not freshman of the year, but maybe even a college player of the year potential guy, even with as good as the basketball program has been, the focus right now would probably be on football. But look, Oregon fans do a better job of supporting basketball, frankly, than Oklahoma fans do. It's always been a king football situation, And look, I also understand that football is the deal at Oregon, but they've done a much better job, especially in recent years, of supporting basketball. But there's definitely a buzz about Trey Young. And I fully anticipate as the calendar turns into January and as they get into Big 12 play, that they're going to all be flocking to watch him because I think at one point you thought, all right, he's a 6'2", slight, you know, kind of built like a pipe cleaner type of guard. He's not very big.
Right.
He might be around a while. As you watch the kid play, it's hard for me not to imagine him being a high lottery pick. It's an uncanny, he's got a feel for the game. You know, he had 22 assists the other night, which set the NCAA record. He had 28 points and 22 assists, which is an amazing number, right?
Right.
He had 29 and like 14 assists or something like that. It might have been 15 assists as they upset then number 3 Wichita State on the road last week. And that the last time somebody had 25 and 10 was one of the players in that 6 overtime game several years ago that happened in the Garden. You remember that one?
Yeah. Big East.
So, and this guy did it in regulation. What's weird is he just plays the game at this sort of rhythm that's like a half beat off, and it throws defenders off, and he'll take these shots, and you're like, well, he's not going to take it. Oh, my goodness, he just hit a 38-footer. You know, it's just and how did he get that shot off? Or, you know, let me just say this. I know Oregon fans saw him score 43. If you're flipping the dial on ESPN and there's a big Monday game going on and Oklahoma's playing, it's probably worth your time to check them out because, you know, a couple of years ago they had a sharpshooter in Buddy Hield who was fun to watch. This guy's different and better, and he's a freshman.
And both guys tortured Oregon.
Yeah, you're right. I'd forgotten that Buddy played. They played Oregon in that regional final, right?
But, yep.
But, I mean, this guy's just different. I don't know really how to describe him. It's a game you've got to watch to appreciate. So I fully anticipate that whatever happens with the football team, there'll be a buzz building with basketball, but it'll be more like once the Big 12 conference play starts.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I've watched him play 4 games, and he actually brings a joy to the game that I really love. Folks,
I think he's going to be a really good NBA player. And I don't want to do this, but I'm about to do it with the same kind of game as a Steph Curry.
Yep.
Now, I'm not saying he's going to be that good. I'm just saying that kind of game and that kind of range, quite frankly.
He's fluid. He's a terrific player. Folks, he is George Schroeder, USAtoday.com, at George Schroeder on Twitter. George, to you and yours, may you have a healthy and a happy Christmas, and we look forward to chatting next week.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to everybody, and look forward to talking with you next Wednesday.
All right, have a good one, George.